2, March 14th, 1992.
We'll get there. We're moving directly into 1813. You see, when time and space have no meaning to you, you become like Oberle. But a good sport. You've got a man that is not even a good criminal, just a corrupt, rotten criminal in your White House. He is now functioning on pure and total blackmail. You're going to find a lot more evolving and coming into your attention about the BCCI and the Bushes and Bahrain and little George Jr. You're going to find Bill Clinton all tangled up in the BCCI. You're going to begin to see all of those attachments, and you will notice that George doesn't even bend as if he is even concerned. He just becomes harder. That means that he has got to get control of you, and I mean legal control of you, before it all bursts, however. So he will do it. He already knows how. He already has the tools by which to do it. He can pull down your economy in one breath. You can see in what happens with the banks. These are why there are 52 journals plus John Coleman's book now. If you didn't read anything else, if you ignored everything else of truth written, you would be able to see. And we're not nearly done. Not even hardly begun. You've had centuries upon centuries, millennia. And basically, until you go back to the original lie, you can't handle this one. But we can start with the original lie and show you what is the lie now. And you can guess at the rest. As long as you can see how it evolved to here and who those players are and what, for goodness sakes, is an adversary and why they may want to terrify you about those little aliens. If you're behaving yourself and those aliens come from God, they're the only place that they can come from if they are, quote, holding your government hostage, as the word comes out. That means, obviously, they are not at this time holding anybody hostage. And they're smart. They have played with something beyond their right to tinker. They have learned, these elite conspirators, to tinker with life itself. And that's a no-no. And that life that they tinker with will turn upon them. Now, is that good or bad? I would suppose that if you live in the kind of existence that does homage to nothing but the evil conspirators, you are in serious trouble. And you better be panicked out of your mind. Because in every instance, the punishment will fit the crime. That is justness. And you better be checking on your crimes. And you better be deciding that you're going to be able to forgive those crimes and put them aside and come back into alignment, or you're going to have a hot foot. I can guarantee it. I will start the fire. If you are working within the laws of God and goodness, then I would suggest that you've got a holiday coming. I think, personally, it was very nice of your government to build you some safety shelters. Let's hear it for safety shelters. Why do you think they've had to build underground facilities in Australia and New Zealand for themselves? Because they know damn good and well we're not going to let them use these. And therefore they plan to bomb the hell out of the Northern Hemisphere.
Yes.
But they've stocked them nicely. They've even created some craft that will get you through the radiation belt. I think that's lovely of them. Now, isn't this a good day? Aren't you glad I finally got around to telling you something fun? Now, I don't know how George goes out there on that radio and says, "Hot dog!" But I suggest that when they ask him about this situation, that he respond with something like, "Well, I'm not worried. How about you? What's your lifestyle?" Because if it's what goes on in the underground elite element in Bakersfield, in the satanic area, it is going to be, I'm telling you flat, incredible. Now, you've known all along when the light hits the dark, which is going to go. And you've also heard little sneaking predictions that God's wrathful. No, God's just. I believe that you also maybe have heard a hint that you don't have anything on this globe that can match anything coming from the outer space. Well, that fits me too. And also, it isn't wise to try to fool Mother Nature or aggravate Tatan. Now, could I get one of you human beings to stand up and tell us what's going on? Because you've got a lot. They're going to go right ahead and play games in the Middle East. And by the way, it isn't just that Israel is selling Patriot missile information and missiles to China. They're selling them all over. They're selling them to Africa. And Africa is at the point this day of death. This referendum is the destruction of Africa. You have watched the nation murdered. And it's murdered by that committee that you support. And while you're playing games, little Jeb Bush is running the little drug cartel in Florida. Oh, they plan to take Castro out. Anybody who listened carefully heard Jerry Brown when somebody said, "What will you do with Castro and Cuba, etc.?" And he turned around and he said, "By the time there is an election, there will be no Castro." Mm-hmm. Quit fooling yourselves, people. The truth can be faced. The lie will kill you. Now, I would appreciate it if John would stand up here and tell you some confirmation.
Thank you, Commander. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I would like you all to be assured of one thing, and that is that it's always a unique pleasure for me to be able to talk with each and every one of you as a group and as individuals, and to let you know that each and every opportunity that I have to address you, I consider a great and unique privilege. And I wonder, with the Commander's permission, if I could just digress into a personal thank you for all of the people in this group, those wonderful people who, by their selflessness and because they are not mean-spirited with their time or their money, made my book possible. I think particularly of George Green, who has not only been un-mean-spirited in his finances but in his personal time. And I thank EJ and I thank Doris likewise for their un-meanness of spirit in giving me their time and their money to help make the book possible. And so, from the depths of my soul, thank you, one and all.
We hear you. We receive.
Now, I'd like to hold this up and ask how many of you recognize the man in this picture? Can you, by any chance, read what it says on there? Talk is cheap. And here you have a picture of President George Herbert Walker Bush at the time of his inauguration, promising faithfully on the Bible and in the name of God to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. And what did Mr. George Bush do immediately thereafter? He folded up the Constitution and he ripped it up in small pieces and he flushed it down the toilet. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a measure, an indication of the lack of moral fiber, of the lack of depth of morality to which the United States of America has descended. When we think that we have a man like this, we say godless individual, devoted to satanic practices through his Skull and Bones organization, in the White House, and worse yet, we have another featherweight. One is totally lacking in moral character, a man who has a fault larger than the San Andreas, an absolute featherweight, and he's running for the presidency. I wake up some days and I rub my eyes when I read the newspaper. Clinton, the front runner. My God, ladies and gentlemen, how much lower can this country go to have to stoop and scrape the bottom of the barrel to have a candidate as totally unworthy as Bill Clinton? It is indeed a measure of how far we have descended. And I wonder just how much time we have left, ladies and gentlemen, to pull this great and wonderful country that God has chosen to be his own, to pull it together and to pull it back from the jaws of destruction. Now, that is not the job of some group out there. It is the job of each and every one of us in this room to strive mightily to oppose those powers that be, the evil powers of darkness, the men who love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. It is our duty to oppose them at every turn of the way. And I thank God that he has given me the strength to commit myself to the task of serving him and serving the purpose that he has laid down for me. I want to tell you that it has not been an easy path. I was very, very impressed with the detailed account of the underground bases that was given a little while ago. And I know one of those bases because it used to be my stamping ground, and that is the Marine Air Terminal at Cherry Point in North Carolina. And the reason why I know it so well is because in my days when I was serving Her Majesty the Queen of England, I was an emissary, a go-between between my service and the American general who was dilly-dallying and dickering with the idea of buying or recommending the purchase of the Hawker Harrier jump jet. And so I, although not a technical man, was overseeing the project, if you like to call it that. So I knew Cherry Point very well, and in fact I became to know this general extremely well, and he showed me a lot of things, a lot of things I was supposed to see and a lot of things I didn't see, I was not supposed to see. So I was very impressed with the detailed and account of the underground bases, and of course the one at Cherry Point particularly caught my attention. It was shortly after that that I parted company with the service and landed up on my 2 feet with virtually nothing else. And when I began to write...
Let me interrupt him just enough to say when he says he ended up with his feet and virtually nothing else, he means it. They take your name, your history, they take everything you had away.
Indeed they do. I remember going to call on people and saying, look, can you help me? Colleagues of mine, and they said, we cannot help you at all, go away from us, you're going to contaminate us, we'd love to help you, but go away, we can't be seen to associate with you any longer. And I began to write the work that I believe God has called me to do, and I know for a fact that he called me to do that, because on a number of occasions I was tempted with offers of jobs which were in the six-figure range plus all of the benefits. And one of those job offers came via the general at the Cherry Point Naval Air Station. And when I met the people who wanted to employ me, it was the Rolls-Royce Company, one of Her Majesty the Queen's own companies, and the general had recommended me to be their lobbyist in Washington, D.C. And when I met these people, they were very charming, upper-class British gentlemen, the most polished people you could probably meet on this earth, representing a decadent and dark and sinister government. They asked me of my association with the service, which in any case they knew, and then they said, you are the ideal man for the job, because the general that we want to impress is already impressed with you, and we know that with your help we can get this contract. But there's one thing you have to do. You have to stop attacking the British establishment. You have to stop attacking Her Majesty the Queen. You have to stop revealing all the machinations of the evil deeds of MI6. Otherwise, we can't employ you. I want to tell you, at that time, I had very, very little in the way of money, because when I left the service, I was cut off financially as well. And it was a very, very difficult job for me to turn around to these people and say, I can't take your six-figure job with your car, with your house in M Street in Washington, and all your benefits, and a big allowance to take the top brass to lunch, because I have a job already to carry out, and I cannot abandon that. Shortly after that, I began writing, and I met a man who was a genuine oil baron. I came across this man in North Carolina. He was up there on a visit, and he told me he'd like to support me, and I thanked him and I said, that's fine. And he said, but there's one thing you've got to do. You have to give up this business of preaching about Emmanuel the Christ and tying all this in with politics. And I told him, no, you can keep your job and your oil barons, I don't want that. And then I was fortunate enough, much later in my career, in fact just a short while ago, to meet a family who farm in the Fresno district. And they have $100 million a year company. And the son was very interested in helping me, which he did. Now his father held the purse strings, so his father wanted to know more about this guy that his son had latched onto. And so he called me aside, he invited me to his house for New Year's Eve party, which was a great honor because only his immediate family were allowed to be at this gathering. And as the evening wore on, he took me aside and he said, look, I want to know, tell me why it is that you are in this position where you don't have any money. With your education and with all your experience, you should be a millionaire. And so I told him. And so he said, that's fine, that's the answer I wanted to hear. He said, I want my son to help you. And so he did. And it progressed, and then God in his infinite wisdom allowed me to meet George Green, to meet EJ and Doris, and this group up here. And it is thanks to them, and thanks to the fact that they do not have any mean-spirited thoughts in their minds or their bodies, that they are generous with all the help that they can give, that I'm able to stand here today and talk with you. And I want to thank you all once again. Now, to get on with the hard facts of life, today we have a very serious situation in that the Israeli government may very well be used as a surrogate to attack Iraq. Mr. Bush feels that there is enough opposition to a direct United States attack at this time, not to go and send United States warplanes, but allow Israel to go in and do the job. And so we've had Mr. Moshe Ahrens, the defense minister of Israel, telling us today that we are not going to wait for the United States. We are not going to wait for another Scud attack on Israel. We want to go in there and clean up these Iraqis today. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, there's no chance whatsoever of Iraq mounting a Scud attack on Israel or any other country, because everything that they had has been destroyed. What you have is a United Nations team that went in there, led by an ex-Central Intelligence Agency operative named David Kay, who up until 2 years ago was the CIA station chief in Jerusalem. Now, Mr. Kay knows nothing about atomic weapons or nuclear weapons, and yet he was chosen by the United Nations to allegedly go and sniff out all these nuclear weapons supposedly hidden in Iraq. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you that is a masquerade. That is nothing but a subterfuge, an excuse to mount another attack on Iraq and to totally destroy this small nation of 17 million people, people in a nation that has never done the United States any harm whatsoever. And why do they want to do this? Because they fear that a resurgent Iraq might still be a danger to Israel. And that is at the heart of the matter. But we have other more urgent and pressing things happening in the world. I'm sure you've all read about the advanced Scud missiles with the longer range that have been shipped to Iran and to Syria. Now, there's quite a story behind this, ladies and gentlemen. These Scuds were made in China, sent to North Korea, and shipped from there because of relations between China and the United States being in somewhat of a parlous condition at the moment. There are lots of people who still remember the Tiananmen Square massacre, and so they have to be a little bit careful. So they shipped these missiles through North Korea, and they sent them in to the port in Iran. Half of the missiles are destined for Iran and the other half destined for Syria. But what is the story behind this? The story behind this is that the Russian nuclear and biological and chemical bacteria warfare weapons, far from being shut down, are being expanded. Recent satellite photos that I received show me 6 new buildings under construction at Sverdlov and Minsk and Moscow. In fact, we've got all 6 sites. We know exactly where these facilities are. And each and every one of them show massive construction going on to expand these facilities. An interesting thing happened a little while ago, ladies and gentlemen. General Lobov, who was chief of the general staff of the Soviet Armed Forces, was found by Israeli Mossad agents to have been selling all types of biological and chemical and bacteriological warfare weapons to Iran. Sold millions of dollars in cash of these deadly weapons, which contain anthrax, which can kill you in a very short while, which contain thickened somain, where a pinhead of drop on your skin will choke you to death in half an hour. Unbelievable weapons of destruction, of mass destruction. Iran has a stockpile of these, second to none. It has a greater stockpile than the United States, which very wisely, I would say, destroyed a great deal of its arsenal some years ago in terms of an agreement they signed with the Russians, then the Soviet Union. But the means of delivery was lacking. So the Chinese stepped in and supplied these weapons, these advanced Scuds, which can now have a range exceeding 300 miles, which means that those based in Syria can straddle Saudi Arabia and Israel, and those based in Iran can do the same thing, although some of them might not reach Israel. Now, why Saudi Arabia? Because the Arab world regards Saudi Arabia as traitors. They do not regard them as fully blown members of the Muslim religion, and that's a long historical story. I've written many works on the subject, and perhaps one day my friend George Green will get round to publishing them in book form. That's a very interesting story. The fact of the matter is that Iran and Syria now have the means of delivering these deadly weapons, nuclear, not nuclear tipped, but tipped with something worse, the CAB warheads, whereas they didn't have that before. So what is happening? All of a sudden there's a need to generate war, because if there's no war and these missiles become operational, the Israelis are going to find themselves in an invidious position of having to back down. And this, of course, neither the United States, their protector, nor the Israeli government itself wants to have happen. So we have an agitation going on at the moment for war. We have another agitation going on in the Soviet Union, which may very well result in the same thing. Now, we have been told that America won the Cold War, and that there's only one superpower in the world today. Ladies and gentlemen, do not delude yourselves. We are not the only superpower. All of the massive arsenal of the Soviet Union remains intact, except now we have changed the title from the Soviet Union to Russia. Mm-hmm. That is the only difference. Otherwise, these 27,000 nuclear weapons are still aimed at the United States of America. 27,000 ICBMs. In addition to that, they have this massive arsenal of electromagnetic frequency, extremely low frequency weapons that can blanket New York and kill millions of people without doing any damage to property. We are not the only superpower. We are, in fact, a second-rate superpower when we compare ourselves with the Russian arsenal. Oh, we've been told all these facilities are closing down. Don't you believe it? The one at Imuras, which makes the most deadly rocket in the arsenal of all world powers, the SS-18 and the SS-20, is producing more missiles today than they did when Mikhail Gorbachev was the president of the country. So where do we stand? We stand at the threshold of a conflagration second to none. Next week on Tuesday, there's going to be a meeting of 100,000 Russian nationalists in Moscow, comprising all sections of the Russian nation which is not in favor of Mr. Yeltsin. Those nationalist forces are even going to embrace and be part of the Russian Orthodox Church for the first time, is joining in the demonstration against Mr. Yeltsin. Now, don't forget, Mr. Yeltsin came to power by minority rule. Only 25% of the Russian people voted for Mr. Yeltsin. 75% of them said, no, we do not want the breakup of our country. I was told some time ago that Yeltsin has until April to get his act together. And thus far he hasn't, which is why you find diverse personalities like Richard Nixon and even Ronald Reagan saying we've got to help the Russians get their act in order, or else. I think they're quite right. Because if the Soviet Union, and I still call it that because that's what it is as far as I'm concerned, but let's say, for example, okay, we'll call it Russia. It is more dangerous today than it ever was before. You have a very large militant group bent on the overthrow of Yeltsin. They hate Professor Jeffrey Sachs, who they see as the new Bukharin, who has imposed upon them the same new economic policy that Bukharin imposed on the Russian people in 1934, for which he was subsequently executed by Stalin. And they are beginning to talk out. So what do we have? We have the prospects of a tremendous confrontation in the Soviet Union, in Russia, if you prefer to call it that. People are hungry. They have no food. People are starving. One of the biggest department stores in Moscow has turned itself into a gigantic flea market because it doesn't have any goods to sell. And there you have all these old Russian ladies who are on pension, coming out with icons they've hidden for years, little bits of treasure, their wedding rings, trying to barter these treasures for food. That's in the biggest department store in Moscow.
So tell them where the food is.
When people get really angry is when they get hungry. Mm-hmm. That's when you see the sparks begin to fly. I'm sorry, Commander, I didn't hear.
So you're having a situation whereby you're keeping the people hungry, and I just wonder if you know where all that food is.
I think I do. A lot of it is being held entirely by the military. They have huge stocks of food which they refuse to turn over.
They have huge underground installations.
Exactly.
Which are completely stocked.
Completely.
To go for years.
They have enough food. The Russian military has enough food, enough arms, enough spare parts, enough money to fight a three-year war against the United States, which they say they will win. And they have enough to take on China as well. And by the way, most of their phased array over-the-horizon radars, the biggest one at Krasnoyarsk, is faced towards China, because they say it is from China that the United States and the Chinese will launch an attack on them. So we are in a very, very precarious situation. They talk about peace. Now, there's something oxymoron for you. Where is peace? There's no peace in the world today. You have Israel champing at the bit to attack Iraq, a nation that's been absolutely viciously attacked with absolutely no reason, a nation against whom genocide is committed. You have them wanting to start a war there. You have the massive nationalist organizations with 22 million members in Russia, plus the military, ready to take on the United States, and in fact some of them are quite anxious to do it. We have never, ever been in such grave danger, ladies and gentlemen, as we are today. Men cry peace, the Bible says, and there is no peace. And if ever that was true of the world, it is true today. What can we do about it? We can fight the good fight, each and every one of us, to see that this country is turned around and that we, the people, once again gather unto ourselves this God-given country, where we don't have men like Jesse Jackson told by a committee, you can't run, we don't want you running, and they have a lightweight, featherweight, no good, character flawed individual like Clinton running for president. We can do something about that. We can stand up and shout and make a very loud noise. But unfortunately, with the exception of people in this room and other groups that I know, people would rather spend $150 on a ticket to go and see the finals of the football or some hockey match. Or they'd prefer to sit in their easy chairs on a weekend and watch TV and say, look, I've got a job and I've got a home and I've got a family. I don't want to mess with these kind of things. I don't want to lose what I've got. They are going to lose it anyway.
John, I got a question.
Yes, sir.
What about the stealth freighters that are going into Iraq with supposedly the Scud missiles at this point?
They are going in there. There's no question about that. But the problem there is that when they begin to start unloading, the stuff that they're unloading is visible. And this is what is worrying not only the Iraqis but the Americans, because they fear that once Israel sees that they are unloading these, they're going to launch a big attack on it without waiting for anybody else.
CNN had a general, four-star general last night, saying that they targeted three places, Syria, Iran, and Iraq, and said that we had sufficient UN forces throughout the Mediterranean area to go after all of these targets, which led to me, they were going to go to all three of them.
Oh, that's it. That's absolutely the case. That's why they are trying, Israel is trying to hurry up and get a war started before the Iranian government and military can make their new long-range Scud missiles operational, and before the Syrians do the same thing. Now, don't think that President Hafez al-Assad is a great friend of George Bush's. He's not. He took advantage of President Bush, and he's such a sucker, he doesn't even know it's happened. He went over there with $4 million cash, a cash check, a cashier's check, and he handed this over to Hafez al-Assad, and he said, look, I want you to prostitute your troops and send them over to fight my war in the Middle East against Iraq. And Hafez said, thanks, oh boy, I'll take the money. And he sent his troops, but he sent them late. They were the last forces to arrive.
And with all your surgical bombing, there wasn't anything.
There was no surgical bombing at all. There was mass destruction visited upon Baghdad by the so-called Allied Air Forces. In fact, the General Accounting Officers issued some figures which really demand our attention, namely that of the smart, that only 20% of the bombs dropped were smart bombs. And of those, only, listen to this, only 8% hit their targets. So what you had was carpet bombing. It was the old Prudential Assurance bombing survey to destroy the civilian population and win the war. Did our planes go down and attack the Iraqis dug in along Basra and on the border of Saudi Arabia? No, they didn't. The moment dear George declared his intention of making war on them, they rushed straight to Baghdad. And they bombed everything that they could see. The civilian infrastructure of Baghdad is totally destroyed.
John?
Yes,
sir. Did they resurrect the World War II bombing campaign?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what they did. I'm sure you're familiar with the Prudential Assurance Bombing Survey, which was run by a lunatic called Bomber Harris, who was later knighted by Her Majesty the Queen for his, quote, services in blotting out millions of people from the air. And they did the same thing again. They resurrected the Prudential Assurance Bombing Survey and applied it to Baghdad. But right now there's a hurry-up situation because Israel and the United States fear that if the Scud missiles become operational in the hands of Syria and Iran, all hell is going to break loose out there in the Middle East. Because today, Mr. Hafez al-Assad stood up and he lashed out at George Bush. He said, the Bush administration's idea of Middle East disarmament is to strip the Arabs of their weapons and go on allowing Israel to produce weapons at will. And he said, we, Syria, are not going to stand for that. So I think you can understand from what I've told you that war is pretty much imminent. And this time it will be a savage war to the death, and may very well spill over and become a worldwide conflagration. Because I don't think, with the knowledge I have of the Russian nationalist forces and their deep hatred for George Bush and the Washington establishment, that they would stand by and not back the Muslim nations.
Is this Saddam Hussein's move?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Why Saddam
Hussein?
Why did they let him live?
Well, if I had to get into all the details of that, I'd be here for the next 2 hours. It is a complicated story. It involves the Banco Nazionale de Lavoro in Atlanta, the way the Bush administration built up Iraq's war machine right up to about 2 weeks before the actual war. We gave them billions of dollars. We built up their entire war machine. It's a long and a complicated story.
George Bush and Saddam Hussein share the same checking account. As a matter of fact.
Yes. We'll give you some idea. But now the people are being fueled to go and fight Iraq again. The big drum of patriotism is about to be beaten once more. And your sons and your daughters are going to be expected to go and lay their lives on the line again for this rotten, wretched Committee of 300 that runs the world.
Is it true that we're going to have martial law?
It's very possible. Everything is in position for it to be declared overnight.
You have
There's so
to
many
have
executive
it.
Orders that it can just happen within any minute.
You're going to have it because they've got to get control of you.
economically, we're in 10% of the people in the United States right now are on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
25 million Americans are drawing food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
We're the supplies and suppliers to the major chains are not even creating any products to sell unless they get orders, and they don't have the money to do that. Major companies are in bankruptcy. In my estimate, over 1 million people are being laid off every week right now across the country.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
The jobs are so incredible right now with how they're keeping it down. In San Francisco, there was San Francisco, the city, put an ad in the paper requesting two people to clean the buses, and they had 15,000 apply.
Mm-hmm.
That's in San Francisco. Just for a cleaning job, to give you an idea, as Desiree and I traveled around the country, of course, we're seeing a lot more homeless people. Even in Chicago, we see them sleeping in the airline terminals.
Mm-hmm.
There was, how many was there?
About a dozen.
About a dozen of them. They were sleeping in the terminal themselves.
In the national parks.
In the national park, that's right. But we're noticing it more and more, as it wasn't quite as apparent, that they won't address this situation on an economic basis. And today they were showing on a special that all of the people that were, like in Washington, D.C., all the people that had retired, they had their government pensions, and they had bought their house, had all their money invested in the banks, and they were getting all these big yields, they're either not getting them or down to 3%, and now they're having to get food stamps themselves. So they're in real trouble. This is our senior citizens.
What about the status of the banks and Citibank?
Well, Citibank is, my understanding is the regulators are working with them right now. They have $200 billion that is missing at this minute. Wells Fargo, our local bank down here, charged off $500 million in the last quarter. We have, I'm just kidding, there are more real estate sales before, but what's happening is they're selling more real estate through Resolution Trust and big packages to their buddies,
mm-hmm.
and then, of course, more sales on the courthouse steps. There are some sections of the country where there are real estate, but, for instance, California, there's 18,000 new people in Colorado, in Denver, for instance, from California, from the registration on their license plates, are leaving California in droves,
mm-hmm.
because of what's happening out here. Their main areas they're going to is Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas. It's just, and that's the information we're getting.
And George, there's some other statistics out that since July last year, over 1 million construction workers have lost their jobs, 50,000 in the first quarter of this year. And what the government is not saying is the number of unfinished houses. But because of banks' credit crunches and no workers, they're not finished. They're standing there in their hundreds unfinished.
Well, we have that, and we have companies like Marriott Corporation who have boarded up their hotels or under construction. They're not even finished them, just to give you an idea.
Well, you're having a government try to maintain this thing until a great calamity can be brought down on you.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to understand that this is part of the plan. And I hear someone ask about the Japanese banks. Let's just put it this way. The Japanese economy is an incredible situation this very day. And the Central Bank of Japan has poured more money to try to keep the yen afloat. So you've got a situation whereby these banks are going to fold. They simply cannot maintain. The intent is to bring down the banks so that there are not more than five.
That's the aim and object. There are five major banks.
So one's asked, well, you told us to get into corporations, you told us to keep our bank accounts small, you did the, what do we do now? Well, you're going to understand something from me. I'm going to tell you what I see as far as possibilities for good business or good movement. I cannot control what they actually do. Make sure your intent is worthy, because you will be going on instinct much of the time. I can tell you what to do and you can go do it. And if your intent is wrong, I promise you will lose. And that doesn't have anything to do with me. That has everything to do with their plans. I would suggest that you begin now to pull out of these other banks and move into one of their houses. It is already worked out with this filthy, rotten, corrupt organization called Bank of America to be able to illegally absorb all these losers. And you will watch it happening from Santa Barbara Savings to the little bank in Orange County. They will get all the good assets. You, the taxpayer, and RTC will suck away the bad debts and, pardon the expression, screw you.
Excuse me, Demanda, could you tell me why it is that the Justice Department is not acting in terms of the Sherman and Clayton Antitrust Acts, which are very much in force? Well, these mergers are completely illegal because they are violating every facet of the Clayton Sherman.
March 14th, 1992.
We'll get there. We're moving directly into 1813. You see, when time and space have no meaning to you, you become like Oberle. But a good sport. You've got a man that is not even a good criminal, just a corrupt, rotten criminal in your White House. He is now functioning on pure and total blackmail. You're going to find a lot more evolving and coming into your attention about the BCCI and the Bushes and Bahrain and little George Jr. You're going to find Bill Clinton all tangled up in the BCCI. You're going to begin to see all of those attachments, and you will notice that George doesn't even bend as if he is even concerned. He just becomes harder. That means that he has got to get control of you, and I mean legal control of you, before it all bursts, however. So he will do it. He already knows how. He already has the tools by which to do it. He can pull down your economy in one breath. You can see in what happens with the banks. These are why there are 52 journals plus John Coleman's book now. If you didn't read anything else, if you ignored everything else of truth written, you would be able to see. And we're not nearly done. Not even hardly begun. You've had centuries upon centuries, millennia. And basically, until you go back to the original lie, you can't handle this one. But we can start with the original lie and show you what is the lie now. And you can guess at the rest. As long as you can see how it evolved to here and who those players are. And what, for goodness sakes, is an adversary. And why they may want to terrify you about those little aliens. If you're behaving yourself and those aliens come from God, they're the only place that they can come from if they are, quote, holding your government hostage, as the word comes out. That means, obviously, they are not at this time holding anybody hostage. And they're smart. They have played with something beyond their right to tinker. They have learned, these elite, conspirators to tinker with life itself. And that's a no-no. And that life that they tinker with will turn upon them. Now, is that good or bad? I would suppose that if you live in the kind of existence that does homage to nothing but the evil conspirators, you are in serious trouble. And you better be panicked out of your mind. Because in every instance, the punishment will fit the crime. That is justness. And you better be checking on your crimes. And you better be deciding that you're going to be able to forgive those crimes and put them aside and come back into alignment. Or you're going to have a hot foot. I can guarantee it. I will start the fire. If you are working within the laws of God and goodness, then I would suggest that you've got a holiday coming. I think, personally, it was very nice of your government to build you some safety shelters. Let's hear it for safety shelters. Why do you think they've had to build underground facilities in Australia and New Zealand for themselves? Because they know damn good and well we're not going to let them use these. And therefore they plan to bomb the hell out of the northern hemisphere.
Yes.
But they've stocked them nicely. They've even created some craft that will get you through the radiation belt. I think that's lovely of them. Now, isn't this a good day? Aren't you glad I finally got around to telling you something fun? Now, I don't know how George goes out there on that radio and says, "Hot dog!" But I suggest that when they ask him about this situation, that he respond with something like, "Well, I'm not worried. How about you? What's your lifestyle?" Because if it's what goes on in the underground elite element in Bakersfield, in the satanic area, it is going to be, I'm telling you flat, incredible. Now, you've known all along when the light hits the dark, which is going to go. And you've also heard little sneaking predictions that God's wrathful. No, God's just. I believe that you also maybe have heard a hint that you don't have anything on this globe that can match anything coming from the outer space. Well, that fits me too. And also, it isn't wise to try to fool Mother Nature or aggravate Hatton. Now, could I get one of you human beings to stand up and tell us what's going on? Because you've got a lot. They're going to go right ahead and play games in the Middle East. And by the way, it isn't just that Israel is selling Patriot missile information and missiles to China. They're selling them all over. They're selling them to Africa. And Africa is at the point this day of death. This referendum is the destruction of Africa. You have watched the nation murdered. And it's murdered by that committee that you support. And while you're playing games, little Jeb Bush is running the little drug cartel in Florida. Oh, they plan to take Castro out. Anybody who listened carefully heard Jerry Brown when somebody said, "What will you do with Castro and Cuba, etc.?" And he turned around and he said, "By the time there is an election, there will be no Castro." Mm-hmm. Quit fooling yourselves, people. The truth can be faced. The lie will kill you. Now, I would appreciate it if John would stand up here and tell you some confirmation.
Thank you, Commander. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I would like you all to be assured of one thing, and that is that it's always a unique pleasure for me to be able to talk with each and every one of you as a group and as individuals, and to let you know that each and every opportunity that I have to address you, I consider a great and unique privilege. And I wonder, with the Commander's permission, if I could just digress into a personal thank you for all of the people in this group, those wonderful people who, by their selflessness and because they are not mean-spirited with their time or their money, made my book possible. I think particularly of George Green, who has not only been unmean-spirited in his finances but in his personal time. And I thank EJ and I thank Doris likewise for their unmeanness of spirit in giving me their time and their money to help make the book possible. And so, from the depths of my soul, thank you, one and all.
We hear you. We receive.
Now, I'd like to hold this up and ask how many of you recognize the man in this picture? Can you, by any chance, read what it says on there? Talk is cheap. Yeah. And here you have a picture of President George Herbert Walker Bush at the time of his inauguration, promising faithfully on the Bible and in the name of God to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. And what did Mr. George Bush do immediately thereafter? He folded up the Constitution and he ripped it up in small pieces and he flushed it down the toilet. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a measure, an indication of the lack of moral fiber, of the lack of depth of morality to which the United States of America has descended. When we think that we have a man like this, who is a godless individual, devoted to satanic practices through his Skull and Bones organization, in the White House, and worse yet, we have another featherweight, one is totally lacking in moral character, a man who has a fault larger than the San Andreas, wow. An absolute featherweight, and he's running for the presidency. I wake up some days and I rub my eyes when I read the newspaper, Clinton the front runner. My God, ladies and gentlemen, how much lower can this country go to have to stoop and scrape the bottom of the barrel to have a candidate as totally unworthy as Bill Clinton? It is indeed a measure of how far we have descended. And I wonder just how much time we have left, ladies and gentlemen, to pull this great and wonderful country that God has chosen to be his own, to pull it together and to pull it back from the jaws of destruction. Now, that is not the job of some group out there. It is the job of each and every one of us in this room
to strive mightily to oppose those powers that be, the evil powers of darkness, the men who love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. It is our duty to oppose them at every turn of the way. And I thank God that He has given me the strength to commit myself to the task of serving Him and serving the purpose that He has laid down for me. I want to tell you that it has not been an easy path. I was very, very impressed with the detailed account of the underground bases that was given a little while ago. And I know one of those bases because it used to be my stamping ground, and that is the Marine Air Terminal at Cherry Point in North Carolina. And the reason why I know it so well is because in my days when I was serving Her Majesty the Queen of England, I was an emissary, a go-between between my service and the American general who was dilly-dallying and dickering with the idea of buying or recommending the purchase of the Hawker Harrier jump jet. And so I, although not a technical man, was overseeing the project, if you like to call it that. So I knew Cherry Point very well. In fact, I became to know this general extremely well, and he showed me a lot of things. A lot of things I was supposed to see and a lot of things I didn't see. I was not supposed to see. So I was very impressed with the detailed and account of the underground basis, and of course the one at Cherry Point particularly caught my attention. It was shortly after that that I parted company with the service and landed up on my 2 feet with virtually nothing else. And when I began to write...
Let me interrupt him just enough to say when he says he ended up with his feet and virtually nothing else, he means it. They take your name, your history, they take everything you had away.
Indeed they do. I remember going to call on people and saying, look, can you help me? Colleagues of mine, and they said, we cannot help you at all. Go away from us. You're going to contaminate us. We'd love to help you, but go away. We can't be seen to associate with you any longer. And I began to write the work that I believe God has called me to do, and I know for a fact that He called me to do that, because on a number of occasions I was tempted with offers of jobs which were in the six-figure range plus all of the benefits. And one of those job offers came via the general at the Cherry Point Naval Air Station. And when I met the people who wanted to employ me, it was the Rolls-Royce Company, one of Her Majesty the Queen's own companies, and the general had recommended me to be their lobbyist in Washington, D.C. And when I met these people, they were very charming, upper-class British gentlemen, the most polished people you could probably meet on this earth, representing a decadent and dark and sinister government. They asked me of my association with the service, which in any case they knew, and then they said, you are the ideal man for the job, because the general that we want to impress is already impressed with you, and we know that with your help we can get this contract. But there's one thing you have to do. You have to stop attacking the British establishment. You have to stop attacking Her Majesty the Queen. You have to stop revealing all the machinations of the evil deeds of MI6. Otherwise, we can't employ you. I want to tell you, at that time, I had very, very little in the way of money, because when I left the service, I was cut off financially as well. And it was a very, very difficult job for me to turn around to these people and say, I can't take your six-figure job with your car, with your house in M Street in Washington, and all your benefits, and a big allowance to take the top brass to lunch, because I have a job already to carry out and I cannot abandon that. Shortly after that I began writing, and I met a man who was a genuine oil baron. I came across this man in North Carolina. He was up there on a visit, and he told me he'd like to support me. And I thanked him, and I said, that's fine. And he said, but there's one thing you've got to do. You have to give up this business of preaching about Emmanuel the Christ and tying all this in with politics. And I told him, no, you can keep your job in your oil barons. I don't want that. And then I was fortunate enough, much later in my career, in fact, just a short while ago, to meet a family who farm in the Fresno district. And they have $100 million a year company. And the son was very interested in helping me, which he did. Now, his father held the purse string, so his father wanted to know more about this guy that his son had latched onto. And so he called me aside. He invited me to his house for a New Year's Eve party, which was a great honor because only his immediate family were allowed to be at this gathering. And as the evening wore on, he took me aside and he said, look, I want to know, tell me why it is that you are in this position where you don't have any money. With your education and with all your experience, you should be a millionaire. And so I told him. And so he said, that's fine, that's the answer I wanted to hear. He said, I want my son to help you. And so he did. And it progressed, and then God in his infinite wisdom allowed me to meet George Green, to meet EJ and Doris, and this group up here. And it is thanks to them, and thanks to the fact that they do not have any mean-spirited thoughts in their minds or their bodies, that they are generous with all the help that they can give, that I'm able to stand here today and talk with you. And I want to thank you all once again. Now, to get on with the hard facts of life, today we have a very serious situation in that the Israeli government may very well be used as a surrogate to attack Iraq. Mr. Bush feels that there is enough opposition to a direct United States attack at this time, not to go and send United States warplanes, but allow Israel to go in and do the job. And so we've had Mr. Moshe Ahrens, the defense minister of Israel, telling us today that we are not going to wait for the United States. We are not going to wait for another Scud attack on Israel. We want to go in there and clean up these Iraqis today. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, there's no chance whatsoever of Iraq mounting a Scud attack on Israel or any other country, because everything that they had has been destroyed. What you have is a United Nations team that went in there, led by an ex-Central Intelligence Agency operative named David Kay, who up until 2 years ago was the CIA station chief in Jerusalem. Now, Mr. Kay knows nothing about atomic weapons or nuclear weapons, and yet he was chosen by the United Nations to allegedly go and sniff out all these nuclear weapons supposedly hidden in Iraq. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you that is a masquerade. That is nothing but a subterfuge, an excuse to mount another attack on Iraq and to totally destroy this small nation of 17 million people, people in a nation that has never done the United States any harm whatsoever. And why do they want to do this? Because they fear that a resurgent Iraq might still be a danger to Israel. And that is at the heart of the matter. But we have other more urgent and pressing things happening in the world. I'm sure you've all read about the advanced Scud missiles with the longer range that have been shipped to Iran and to Syria. Now, there's quite a story behind this, ladies and gentlemen. These Scuds were made in China, sent to North Korea, and shipped from there because of relations between China and the United States being in somewhat of a parlous condition at the moment. Lots of people who still remember the Tiananmen Square massacre, and so they have to be a little bit careful. So they shipped these missiles through North Korea, and they sent them in to the port in Iran. Half of the missiles are destined for Iran, and the other half destined for Syria. But what is the story behind this? The story behind this is that the Russian nuclear and biological and chemical bacteria warfare weapons, far from being shut down, are being expanded. Recent satellite photos that I received show me 6 new buildings under construction at Sverdlov,
and near Minsk and Moscow. In fact, we've got all six sites. We know exactly where these facilities are. And each and every one of them show massive construction going on to expand these facilities. An interesting thing happened a little while ago, ladies and gentlemen. General Lobov, who was chief of the general staff of the Soviet armed forces, was found by Israeli Mossad agents to have been selling all types of biological and chemical and bacteriological warfare weapons to Iran. Sold millions of dollars in cash of these deadly weapons, which contain anthrax, which can kill you in a very short while, which contain thickened somain, where just a tiny little pinhead of drop on your skin will choke you to death in half an hour. Unbelievable weapons of destruction, of mass destruction. Iran has a stockpile of these, second to none. It has a greater stockpile than the United States, which very wisely, I would say, destroyed a great deal of its arsenal some years ago in terms of an agreement they signed with the Russians, then the Soviet Union. But the means of delivery was lacking. So the Chinese stepped in and supplied these weapons, these advanced Scuds, which can now have a range exceeding 300 miles, which means that those based in Syria can straddle Saudi Arabia and Israel, and those based in Iran can do the same thing, although some of them might not reach Israel. Now, why Saudi Arabia? Because the Arab world regards Saudi Arabia as traitors. They do not regard them as fully blown members of the Muslim religion, and that's a long historical story. I've written many works on the subject, and perhaps one day my friend George Green will get round to publishing them in book form. That's a very interesting story. The fact of the matter is that Iran and Syria now have the means of delivering these deadly weapons, nuclear, not nuclear tipped, but tipped with something worse, the CAB warheads, whereas they didn't have that before. So what is happening? All of a sudden there's a need to generate war, because if there's no war and these missiles become operational, the Israelis are going to find themselves in an invidious position of having to back down. And this, of course, neither the United States, their protector, nor the Israeli government itself wants to have happen. So we have an agitation going on at the moment for war. We have another agitation going on in the Soviet Union, which may very well result in the same thing. Now, we have been told that America won the Cold War, and that there's only one superpower in the world today. Ladies and gentlemen, do not delude yourselves. We are not the only superpower. All of the massive arsenal of the Soviet Union remains intact, except now we have changed the title from the Soviet Union to Russia. Mm-hmm. That is the only difference. Otherwise, these 27,000 nuclear weapons are still aimed at the United States of America. 27,000 ICBMs. In addition to that, they have this massive arsenal of electromagnetic frequency, extremely low frequency weapons that can blanket New York and kill millions of people without doing any damage to property. We are not the only superpower. We are, in fact, a second-rate superpower when we compare ourselves with the Russian arsenal. Oh, we've been told all these facilities are closing down. Don't you believe it? The one at Imoursk, which makes the most deadly rocket in the arsenal of all world powers, the SS-18 and the SS-20, is producing more missiles today than they did when Mikhail Gorbachev was the president of the country. So where do we stand? We stand at the threshold of a conflagration second to none. Next week on Tuesday, there's going to be a meeting of 100,000 Russian nationalists in Moscow, comprising all sections of the Russian nation, which is not in favor of Mr. Yeltsin. Those nationalist forces are even going to embrace and be part of the Russian Orthodox Church for the first time, is joining in the demonstration against Mr. Yeltsin. Now, don't forget, Mr. Yeltsin came to power by minority rule. Only 25% of the Russian people voted for Mr. Yeltsin. 75% of them said, no, we do not want the breakup of our country. I was told some time ago that Yeltsin has until April to get his act together. And thus far he hasn't, which is why you find diverse personalities like Richard Nixon and even Ronald Reagan saying we've got to help the Russians get their act in order, or else. I think they're quite right. Because if the Soviet Union, and I still call it that because that's what it is as far as I'm concerned, but let's say, for example, okay, we'll call it Russia. It is more dangerous today than it ever was before. You have a very large militant group bent on the overthrow of Yeltsin. They hate Professor Jeffrey Sachs, who they see as the new Bukharin, who has imposed upon them the same new economic policy that Bukharin imposed on the Russian people in 1934, for which he was subsequently executed by Stalin. And they are beginning to talk out. So what do we have? We have the prospects of a tremendous confrontation in the Soviet Union, in Russia, if you prefer to call it that. People are hungry. They have no food. People are starving. One of the biggest department stores in Moscow has turned itself into a gigantic flea market because it doesn't have any goods to sell. And there you have all these old Russian ladies who are on pension, coming out with icons they've hidden for years, little bits of treasure, their wedding rings, trying to barter these treasures for food. That's in the biggest department store in Moscow.
So tell them where the food is.
When people get really angry is when they get hungry. Mm-hmm. That's when you see the sparks begin to fly. I'm sorry, Commander, I didn't hear.
So you're having a situation whereby you're keeping the people hungry, and I just wonder if you know where all that food is.
I think I do. A lot of it is being held entirely by the military. They have huge stocks of food which they refuse to turn over.
They have huge underground installations.
Exactly.
Which are completely stocked.
Completely.
To go for years.
They have enough food, the Russian military has enough food, enough arms, enough spare parts, enough money to fight a 3-year war against the United States, which they say they will win. And they have enough to take on China as well. And by the way, most of their phased array over the horizon radars, the biggest one at Krasnoyarsk, is faced towards China, because they say it is from China that the United States and the Chinese will launch an attack on them. So we are in a very, very precarious situation. They talk about peace. Now, there's something oxymoron for you. Where is peace? There's no peace in the world today. You have Israel champing at the bit to attack Iraq, a nation that's been absolutely viciously attacked with absolutely no reason, a nation against whom genocide is committed. You have them wanting to start a war there. You have the massive nationalist organizations with 22 million members in Russia, plus the military, ready to take on the United States, and in fact some of them are quite anxious to do it. We have never, ever been in such grave danger, ladies and gentlemen, as we are today. Men cry peace, the Bible says, and there is no peace. And if ever that was true of the world, it is true today. What can we do about it? We can fight the good fight, each and every one of us, to see that this country is turned around and that we, the people, once again gather unto ourselves this God-given country, where we don't have men like Jesse Jackson told by a committee, you can't run, we don't want you running, and they have a lightweight, featherweight, no good, character flawed individual like Clinton running for president. We can do something about that. We can stand up and shout and make a very loud noise. But unfortunately, with the exception of people in this room and other groups that I know, people would rather spend $150 on a ticket to go and see the finals of the football or some hockey match, or they'd prefer to sit in their easy chairs on a weekend and watch TV and say, look, I've got a job and I've got a home and I've got a family. I don't want to mess with these kind of things. I don't want to lose what I've got. They are going to lose it anyway.
John, I got a question.
Yes, sir.
What about the stealth freighters that are going into Iraq with supposedly the Scud missiles at this point?
They are going in there. There's no question about that. But the problem there is that when they begin to start unloading, the stuff that they're unloading is visible. And this is what is worrying not only the Iraqis but the Americans, because they fear that once Israel sees that they are unloading these, they're going to launch a big attack on it without waiting for anybody else.
CNN had a general, four-star general last night saying that they targeted three places, Syria, Iran, and Iraq, and said that we had sufficient UN forces throughout the Mediterranean area to go after all of these targets, which led to me they were going to go to all three of them.
Oh, that's it. That's absolutely the case. That's why they are trying, Israel is trying to hurry up and get a war started before the Iranian government and military can make their new long-range Scud missiles operational, and before the Syrians do the same thing. Now, don't think that President Hafez al-Assad is a great friend of George Bush's. He's not. He took advantage of President Bush, and he's such a sucker, he doesn't even know it's happened. He went over there with $4 million cash, a cash check, a cashier's check, and he handed this over to Hafez Assad, and he said, look, I want you to prostitute your troops and send them over to fight my war in the Middle East against Iraq. And Hafez said, thanks, oh boy, I'll take the money. And he sent his troops, but he sent them late. They were the last forces to arrive.
And with all your surgical bombing, there wasn't anything.
There was no surgical bombing at all. There was mass destruction boosted upon Baghdad by the so-called Allied Air Forces. In fact, the General Accounting Office has issued some figures which really demand our attention, namely that of the smart, that only 20% of the bombs dropped were smart bombs. And of those, only, listen to this, only 8% hit their targets. So what you had was carpet bombing. It was the old Prudential Assurance bombing survey to destroy the civilian population and win the war. Did our planes go down and attack the Iraqis dug in along Basra and on the border of Saudi Arabia? No, they didn't. The moment dear George declared his intention of making war on them, they rushed straight to Baghdad and they bombed everything that they could see. The civilian infrastructure of Baghdad is totally destroyed.
John?
Yes,
sir. Did they resurrect the World War II bombing campaign?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what they did. I'm sure you're familiar with the Prudential Assurance bombing survey, which was run by a lunatic called Bomber Harris, who was later knighted by Her Majesty the Queen for his, quote, services in blotting out millions of people from the air. And they did the same thing again. They resurrected the Prudential Assurance bombing survey and applied it to Baghdad. But right now there's a hurry-up situation, because Israel and the United States fear that if the Scud missiles become operational in the hands of Syria and Iran, all hell is going to break loose out there in the Middle East. Because today, Mr. Hafez Assad stood up and he lashed out at George Bush. He said, the Bush administration's idea of Middle East disarmament is to strip the Arabs of their weapons and go on allowing Israel to produce weapons at will. And he said, we, Syria, are not going to stand for that. So I think you can understand from what I've told you that war is pretty much imminent. And this time it will be a savage war to the death, and may very well spill over and become a worldwide conflagration. Because I don't think, with the knowledge I have of the Russian nationalist forces and their deep hatred for George Bush and the Washington establishment, that they would stand by and not back the Muslim nations.
Is this Saddam Hussein's move?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Why Saddam Hussein?
Hassan Hussein?
Why did they let him live?
Well, if I had to get into all the details of that, I'd be here for the next 2 hours. It is a complicated story. It involves the Banco Nazionale de Lavoro in Atlanta, the way the Bush administration built up Iraq's war machine right up to about 2 weeks before the actual war. We gave them billions of dollars. We built up their entire war machine. It's a long and a complicated story.
George Bush and Saddam Hussein shared the same checking account, as a matter of fact.
Yes. We'll give you some idea. But now the government, now the people are being fueled to go and fight Iraq again. The big drum of patriotism is about to be beaten once more. And your sons and your daughters are going to be expected to go and lay their lives on the line again for this rotten, wretched Committee of 300 that runs the world.
Is it true that we're going to have martial law?
It's very possible. Everything is in position for it to be declared overnight.
There's so many executive
orders that it can just happen within any minute.
You're going to have it because they've got to get control of you.
Economically, we're in 10% of the people in the United States right now are on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
25 million Americans are drawing food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Where the supplies and suppliers to the major chains are not even creating any products to sell unless they get orders, and they don't have the money to do that. Major companies are in bankruptcy. In my estimate, over a million people are being laid off every week right now across the country.
That's correct.
The jobs are so incredible right now, how they're keeping it down. In San Francisco, the city put an ad in the paper requesting two people to clean the buses, and they had 15,000 apply. That's in San Francisco. Just for a cleaning job, to give you an idea, as Desiree and I traveled around the country, of course, we're seeing a lot of more homeless people. Even in Chicago, we see them sleeping in the airline terminals.
Mm-hmm.
It was, how many was there?
About a dozen
of them. They were sleeping in the terminal themselves.
In the national parks.
In the national park. That's right. But we're noticing it more and more, as it wasn't quite as apparent, that they won't address this situation on an economic basis. And today they were showing on a special that all of the people that were, like in Washington, D.C., all the people that had retired, they had their government pensions, and they had bought their house, had all their money invested in the banks, and they were getting all these big yields. They're either not getting them or down to 3%, and now they're having to get food stamps themselves. So they're in real trouble. This is our senior citizens.
What about the status of the banks and Citibank?
Well, Citibank is, my understanding is the regulators are working with them right now. They have $200 billion that is missing at this minute. Wells Fargo, our local bank down here, charged off $500 million in the last quarter. We have, I'm just kidding, there are more real estate sales before, but what's happening is they're selling more real estate through Resolution Trust and big packages to their buddies,
mm-hmm.
and then, of course, more sales on the courthouse steps. There are some sections of the country where there are real estate, but, for instance, California, there's 18,000 new people in Colorado, in Denver, for instance, from California, from the registration on their license plates, are leaving California in droves,
mm-hmm.
because of what's happening out here. Their main areas they're going to is Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas. It's just, and that's the information we're getting.
And George, there's some other statistics out that since July last year, over a million construction workers have lost their jobs, 50,000 in the first quarter of this year. And what the government is not saying is the number of unfinished houses. But because of banks, credit crunches, and no workers, they're not finished. They're standing there in their hundreds unfinished.
Well, we have that, and we have companies like Marriott Corporation who have boarded up their hotels or under construction. They're not even finished them, just to give you an idea.
Well, you're having a government try to maintain this thing until a great calamity can be brought down on you.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to understand that this is part of the plan. And I hear someone ask about the Japanese banks. Let's just put it this way. The Japanese economy is an incredible situation this very day. And the Central Bank of Japan has poured more money to try to keep the yen afloat. So you've got a situation whereby these banks are going to fold. They simply cannot maintain. The intent is to bring down the banks so that there are not more than five.
Yeah,
so they can control.
That's the aim and object. There are five major banks.
So ones ask, well, you told us to get into corporations. You told us to keep our bank accounts small. You did that. What do we do now? Well, you're going to understand something from me. I'm going to tell you what I see as far as possibilities for good business or good movement. I cannot control what they actually do. Make sure your intent is worthy, because you will be going on instinct much of the time. I can tell you what to do and you can go do it. And if your intent is wrong, I promise you will lose. And that doesn't have anything to do with me. That has everything to do with their plans. I would suggest that you begin now to pull out of these other banks and move into one of their houses. It is already worked out with this filthy, rotten, corrupt organization called Bank of America to be able to illegally absorb all these losers. And you will watch it happening from Santa Barbara Savings to the little bank in Orange County. They will get all the good assets. You, the taxpayer, and RTC will suck away the bad debts and, pardon the expression, screw you.
Excuse me, Demanda, could you tell me why it is that the Justice Department is not acting in terms of the Sherman and Clayton antitrust acts, which are very much in force? Well, these mergers are completely illegal because they are violating every facet of the Clayton-Sherman